friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sunny Young in Washington. No fooling. This is the April 1st edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. When it comes to athletics, Kenya has a very proud pedigree. The country has produced Olympic champions, world champions, and world record holders. When it comes to football, though, there hasn't been anywhere near the same international success. The Harambee Stars of Kenya have never qualified for the FIFA World Cup. And in six appearances at the Nations Cup, African football's premier tournament, the Kenyans have never made it past the group stage. The Harambee Stars ended their qualifying campaign for next year's Nations Cup in Cameroon on Monday, when they scored a 2-1 road victory against Togo. It wasn't enough, though, to qualify for the 2022 Nations Cup. The Kenyans finished third in their qualifying group, behind Comoros and top-of-the-table Egypt. For reaction, Iron Mike Mbonye called Nairobi, where he reached an online sports editor at Nation Media Group, David Kwalimwa.
Well, I was not overly surprised that Kenya failed to qualify for the 2022 Africa Cup of Nations in Cameroon. In an earlier interview with you, I told you that it was highly unlikely Kenya will qualify considering the team's performance in the competition up until the match day four. Remember, Kenya had only managed to garner 3 points from four matches, three draws, and that was hardly impressive form for Kenya. And I did tell you that it was mainly because of the change in coaches from Francis Kimanzi to Jacob Ghost Mulee that Kenya possibly lost momentum in a bid to qualify, having made a perfect start, in my opinion, by holding Egypt to a 1-1 draw away from home in Alexandria and then coming to draw again 1-1 with Togo in Nairobi. But the change in coaches did affect Kenya completely because the new coach, Jacob Ghost Mulee, needed time to settle, as it turned out to be. And he managed to hold Comoros to a 1-1 draw in Nairobi before losing to the same opponent in Moroni. And at that point, it was very hard for Kenya to qualify. Again, the COVID-19 disruptions did affect Kenya. It did actually affect everybody, but Kenya as well. For a year, without football, the Kenyan League was stopped for a year. And very many of the players who compete in the Kenyan League were very rusty heading into national team duty and the assignments. It did affect Kenya chances of securing qualification to the 2021 Africa Cup of Nations. Remember, Kenya did qualify for the last edition of the games held in Egypt in a group that also consisted of Sierra Leone, Ethiopia and Ghana, with Kenya beating Ghana and Ethiopia in Nairobi to secure qualification. But this time round, it was tough for Kenya in a group that also consisted Egypt, Comoro and an impressive Togo, if you ask me. So it's back to the drawing board for Team Kenya under Jacob Ghost Mulee, despite impressive performances in the last two matches. Of course, drawing 1-1 with Egypt in Nairobi and then beating Togo 2-1 in Lomé. A couple of impressive results and 4 points in the last two matches when it didn't quite matter, when there was no pressure Kenya coming to deliver. But the 4 points were not enough for Kenya, as Comoro and Egypt did qualify from Group G to the 2021 Africa Cup of Nations. Remember, the tournament is rescheduled and will be held in Cameroon next year.
Do you know of any East African country that has qualified? What are their chances against the big names in African football?
On the contrary, I was surprised by Uganda's failure to qualify. Uganda being pulled alongside Burkina Faso, South Sudan and Malawi. Uganda having qualified for the last two editions of the Africa Cup of Nations in Gabon and Egypt. And being one of the standout teams from East and Central Africa, were expected to literally walk through to qualification in this group considering the opposition. But it was not to be, with the loss to Nairobi against South Sudan. Remember, the match against South Sudan was played at a neutral venue in Nairobi because of challenges in Juba. Uganda losing to South Sudan in Nairobi, that was a turning point. And remember, after that, Irishman John McKinstry was told to step aside by the Ugandan FA, and in came local boy Abdallah Mubiru, who struggled to draw 0-0 against Burkina Faso in Kampala and then lose 1-0 to Malawi, the Flames of Malawi in Lilongwe, and Uganda suffering a heartbreaker elimination in a group that they were easily expected to qualify. Again, a change of coaches midway through the campaign seems to have undone Uganda, but apart from that, there are a group or a clique of players in the Ugandan team whom analysts and pundits will have to question if they are over the hill. On top of my mind, I think of Emmanuel Lekui, who suffered a former dip even at club level in Egypt. He turns out for Etihad. And Dennis Onyango, who's been there forever, he turns out for Mamelodi Sundowns in South Africa. But one will start thinking possibly Uganda should start injecting fresh blood into the team or move the team into a different direction, because these players have been there, they've done it in terms of qualification to the Africa Cup of Nations. But since most of them are on the wrong side of 30, some are approaching 35, you'll have to think possibly going forward, Uganda will need to bring in some fresh blood, some fresh talent to be able to move to the next stage or to be able to consistently dominate in the Africa Cup of Nations qualifying matches.
The World Cup qualifiers will start in May. How would you rate the chances of East African countries?
In regard to the 2022 FIFA World Cup qualifiers in Qatar, interestingly, three East African countries, namely Uganda, Kenya, and Rwanda, are grouped in the same pool with Mali in the running to qualify for Qatar 2022. It's going to be an interesting East Africa derby between Uganda, Rwanda, and Kenya, with Mali, the West Africans, the only possible outsiders in this group. Remember, the top team in this group will have to compete in a playoff to qualify for Qatar. But already you can see that there is a chance that any of these teams will have a chance, because there is not much to separate between these two teams in terms of FIFA rankings and in terms of previous performances. None of these four teams have qualified for the FIFA World Cup before. So this has a better chance for any of these teams to qualify. But it's not going to be easy as well, because derby's form book does not quite count on derby's. Anything can just happen in these matches in Nairobi, in Kampala, and in Kigali. Mali also being a dominant force in African football of late, and with some good talents coming through. So a trip to West Africa is not one that the likes of Kenya, Uganda, and Rwanda will fancy.
That's David Kwalimwa, an online sports editor at Nation Media Group. And David spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Nairobi, Kenya.
Hello, sports fans. This is Paul Tergat, marathon champion from Kenya. You are listening to the Sony Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Paul Tergat has been the president of the National Olympic Committee of Kenya since 2017. And he recently received another honor. Paul was appointed a board member of the Olympic Refugee Foundation for a period of 4 years. In a statement, the foundation said it's committed to using sport to protect and support young people affected by displacement worldwide. Paul Tergat has also served as a goodwill ambassador for the World Food Program, and he says he's humbled by the Olympic Refugee Foundation appointment. Now, Kenya is currently one of the host countries of the Refugee Olympic Team. 18 IOC refugee scholarship holders are currently training in Engong, Kenya, hoping to be a part of the Refugee Olympic Team for this year's Tokyo Games in Japan. For members of the Refugee Olympic Team, I'm sure it will be a thrill to live in the Olympic Village during the Games and talk with other Olympians. Jason Gardner competed in two Olympics for Britain, winning a gold medal at the 2004 Games in Athens and he's currently the president of British Athletics. Jason has been chatting the past couple of days with the energetic Andy Edwards. In the final part of their conversation, Andy asked Jason, how did you mentally approach being in the Olympic Village?
It's fascinating, really, because in Sydney, my physical very best in my career, and probably the relay team as well, individually, we were much more faster than we were in 2004. I thought the journey was just going to be easy. I mean, I got to the Olympics. My kind of plan I'd written down as a schoolboy was, you know, coming to fruition. It all kind of fell apart. And as you said, you know, it's your Olympics as well. You know, everybody wants to make sure they deliver. And I see that, you know, everybody wants to, you know, access to athletes, whether it's journalists, whether it's the sponsors, everybody wants to get their piece of the action. We learned some really hard lessons from the failures of Sydney. I overtrained, you know, I wanted it too much. And I done, you know, because of the previous year, I got great results. And I thought, okay, more hard work, more is better. And I overcooked it. And like a lot of athletes do. Fortunately, 4 years later on, I became a bit more mature. I changed coaches. But unfortunately, during the Olympic year, I've obviously overcooked it again because I won the world indoor title, but required a double hernia repair. I mean, my body was, as I said, for my career, I kept pushing it to bits. You can't run 100 meters at 95% unless you are somebody like a Usain Bolt and make everybody else look still second rate. I had a broken wrist. I was carrying a baton with a fully broken wrist. I was having 3 epidurals a year just to try and be able to train and compete. And I had Achilles problems as well. So, you know, a lot of athletes who will be listening to this and coaches, these stories seem very similar to a lot of people. But it was a realisation of spending time in these kind of cool rooms with other athletes, seeing the likes of Kelly Holmes, the problems she went through, and still achieving success. And Malcolm Arnold training with him enabled me to know that you can still achieve success when things aren't going well. And that's when I started to learn a lot about mental toughness. And going looking at our relay, we had a lot more mature athletes at this stage in our careers, and we became a team. Whereas in Sydney, we were just a bunch of individuals. There was too many of us there. It was all about the I rather than the team. But in Athens, I think it's fair to say, we all knew that individually our performances weren't at that level to really deliver podium results. But over that year or so going into those games, we really focused tremendously as a squad working on our changeovers. Part of that process was to do with the fallout of Dwayne Chambers. He took drugs and got all his records removed, and also the qualification, the relay going into Athens, all the results were annulled because he'd been in part of the team. But suddenly that caused a kind of team meeting to discuss our situation. And if we were going to qualify for Athens, we had to go and put a lot more training in and go and compete on the continent to try and get a qualification. And that was part of the process which enabled the team to really come together. Yeah, understanding the challenges of the Olympic Village is so much more heightened. And it's about not losing your focus. Control the controllables. You know, remember, you know, as an athlete, my job is there. I'm not on holiday, like all the people from all around the world just going there to, is the Olympics, want to be part of it. My job is to deliver the results and do my job and not get distracted. Sounds very common sense, but it's amazing how many people get distracted and lose total sight of what they're there to do.
I didn't have those kind of pressures, but I think there are a lot of journalists who would relate to that. Okay. Some athletes look up at the press seats and say, well, how many medals have they got? But that key phrase, my job is to deliver, I'm not on holiday. I've heard stories also about athletes, the dangers of eating too much, because I remember Seoul 1988, very nice, well, not luxury, but ideal accommodation, ideal organisation. But the canteen for journalists was open 24 hours a day because people had deadlines around the clock. Now, that's true of the athletes. And I've heard stories of athletes saying, oh, I ate too much, which sounds like a basic error, but I can understand nervous anxiety drives you to it.
Yeah, and time. When you've got lots of time where you're not doing anything, it's, you know, you want to get out of your room. It's not like you're at home where you can go and just, you know, you've got your other things, you have a commitment, you can see friends, or just you have a routine. You've suddenly got lots of time on your hands, and so it's very easy to pop down. And if you've got freezers full of ice creams and you've got a McDonald's in the canteen dinner hall, you know, which is free, It's all these temptations, and the focus, isn't it? It's about the ability to just focus and have discipline to do your job as well as you possibly can. My other coach used to say, now these things are there, they're all distractions. They're all distractions to distract you, and the people which come out of it are the ones that don't get distracted. And you see it in the best athletes, the focus. You see that you know, they are professional, they're focused.
Well, Jason, that's been a really fascinating insight into your path, which I appreciate is far from finished, and also that insight into the Olympic Village. Well, Jason Gardner, thank you very much for talking to us.
It's been a pleasure.
This is the Voice of America, Washington, D.C.
Squatty greetings, everyone. This is Ambassador Mary Onyale, Olympic medalist, five-time African champion in the sprint event. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
Hello. This is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Sporty greetings. This is Clyde Tlou, an African football analyst. You're listening to Sunny Side of Sport on the Voice of America. Please continue to stay safe and avoid contacting COVID-19. Thank you.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say we all can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands with soap and water or using hand sanitizers. For more information on protecting yourself and others, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa Center for Disease Control. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
I'm VOA's Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. In U.S. college basketball, the biggest weekend of the season is about to tip off in Indianapolis, Indiana, and San Antonio, Texas. In Indianapolis, it's the men's Final Four, and in San Antonio, it's the women's Final Four. In Friday night's women's semifinals, Stanford will play South Carolina, and that will be followed by a game between Connecticut and Arizona. The Lady Huskies of Connecticut have been a powerhouse in U.S. women's college basketball for more than 25 years. They've won a record 11 national titles since 1995. Meanwhile, the men's semifinals will be played Saturday night in Indianapolis in a matchup between Texas-based universities. Houston will play Baylor, and that will be followed by a game between UCLA and top-seeded Gonzaga. UCLA, like the Lady Huskies of Connecticut, has won a record 11 national titles, but the Bruins of UCLA will be the underdog when they take on the unbeaten Bulldogs of Gonzaga, who are bidding for a perfect season and their first national title. And this Sunny Side of Sports programming note, Dan Friedel will have a feature report on Friday's show about the men's and women's Final Four in U.S. college basketball. In professional basketball, the NBA's Utah Jazz won their seventh consecutive game Wednesday night when they scored a 111-107 road victory against the Memphis Grizzlies. Mike Conley scored 13 of his 26 points in the fourth quarter for Utah, and teammate Jordan Clarkson added 24 points. The Jazz have the NBA's best record, 36 wins and 11 losses. Elsewhere around the NBA, young Slovenian star Luka Doncic delivered another excellent all-around performance for the Dallas Mavericks, who beat the host Boston Celtics Wednesday night. The AP's Gethin Coolbaugh reports.
Another big night from Luka Doncic helped the Mavericks hold off the Celtics 113-108. Doncic put up a game-high 36 points and 8 rebounds to keep Dallas afloat as the Mavs nearly let a 23-point advantage slip away.
Mostly the first half, you know, we played with pace. We were defending really good. And I think that was the key to the game.
Boston outscored Dallas 35-23 in the fourth to pull within three late, but couldn't finish the comeback. Jalen Brunson added 21 points, and Kristaps Porzingis added 19 points for the 25-21 Mavericks. Jason Tatum's 25 points, Jalen Brown's 24, and Kemba Walker's 22 led the 23-25 Celtics. I'm Gethin Coolbaugh.
Thanks, Gethin. In another NBA result, the Milwaukee Bucks snapped a three-game losing streak in a 112-97 victory over the defending champion Los Angeles Lakers. The AP's Mark Myers reports.
The Bucks put a stop to their three-game losing skid by beating the Lakers 112-97 in Los Angeles. Milwaukee's Drew Holiday scored a game-high 28 points. Teammate Giannis Antetokounmpo had 25 with 10 rebounds. Afterwards, the Greek Freak said Holiday is a key part of the Bucks' offense.
We need him to be aggressive, and that's the only way it's going to work. You know, that's the only way it is going to work, and that's how we're going to win games, by him being a threat out there.
In his Laker debut, newly acquired Andre Drummond had 4 points in 14 minutes before leaving in the third quarter with a toe injury.
Just unfortunate to, you know, have this happen to me in the first game. Kind of was a little deflating for me, but, you know, my head is high. Going to take it day by day and come back better than ever.
I'm Mark Myers.
Thanks, Mark. Let's give a Sunny Side of Sports salute to Phoenix Suns guard Devin Booker, who was the NBA's top scorer on Wednesday night. The two-time All-Star fired in a season-high 45 points to help lead the Suns to a 121-116 victory over the visiting Chicago Bulls. It was the fourth consecutive win for the Suns, who improved their record to 33 victories and 14 defeats. That puts Phoenix three games behind first-place Utah in the NBA's Western Conference.
Sporty greetings. This is Ike Diagu, captain of the Nigerian men's national basketball team. You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Thanks.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Next up on the program, crisis at the U.S. southern border. We'll talk with an expert on Central America and a U.S. immigration expert about President Biden's two-pronged approach to stemming the flow of migrants from the Northern Triangle countries. That's Encounter next Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Sporting greetings. This is William Cho Sekong from Watford Football Club and Nigeria Super Eagles. You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Thank you.
Thank you, William. And congratulations to the Super Eagles for their recent 3-0 victory against the Crocodiles of Lesotho, which wrapped up a successful Nations Cup qualifying campaign for Nigeria. In more football news, Rebecca Welch has become the first female referee to be appointed in the English Football League. VOA's Gwen Ooten joins us now with a profile. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Rebecca Welch
Welch is set to make history next week when she blows her whistle at Harrogate Town's home fixture with Port Vale. But on Tuesday, she told Reuters News as she prepares to take charge, the reality of becoming the EFL's first female referee hadn't quite sunk in.
I've had a couple of days to get the grips with it, but yeah, I'm still on cloud nine, so hopefully over the next couple of days, once everything dies down, then I'll really start to digest it. But yeah, great opportunity for me.
Welch first stepped on the football pitch as a player, but made the switch to referee 10 years ago after watching a friend officiate a game. Welch started as a ref for women's university games, but she says Sunday league clashes helped her hone the skills to climb the ranks as a match official.
You know, you've got to be in the top 1-2% of every category in order to get promoted. So the competition's tough. We've got some really good referees across England. So, yeah, you've got to make sure you're in the top 1-2%. And if you're not, then you won't be considered. But if you are, then you'll progress to the next level.
During her 10-year career, Welch has refereed the Women's FA Cup Final twice and officiated in the Men's National League for 3 seasons. But the 37-year-old says becoming the highest-ranking female referee in English football is her biggest achievement yet. And Welch says she hopes to blaze a trail for other women to follow.
We've had girls officiate in the top level before. You know, we've had Amy Fearn, we've obviously got Sean Massey in the Premier League, got Natalie Aspinall in the Championship. But yeah, I'm the first referee, so very proud, you know, a lot of hard work. So yeah, happy to be the first, and I'm sure I'll be the first of many over the next few years.
And in the past year, more women have broken the glass ceiling on the pitch. In January, 3 female referees made history at the African Nations Championship in Cameroon. Ethiopian referee Lydia Tafasi and her assistants, Malawian Bernadette Quimbira, and Nigerian Mimisen Laorhi became the first women to control a match at a Senior Confederation of African Football men's tournament. And last December, French referee Stephanie Frappere became the first woman to referee in the men's UEFA Champions League. The Football Association says since the formation of the Women's Super League, the number of female referees has gone up 76% since 2016. And with over 2,000 women reported to have officiated at all levels of the game in the past year, Rebecca Welch says she has no doubt we will see a female referee in the Premier League in the very near future. And that is all for me, Sonny. Back over to you.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uden.
Hi, I'm Kim Lewis. Join me with panelist Chris Simpkins, VOA Senior TV Correspondent, and Kimberly Adams, Correspondent for Marketplace, as we discuss the top stories of the week, including the trial of former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin, who was charged in the death of George Floyd. Don't miss Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Earlier in the show, I mentioned that powerhouse women's basketball team at the University of Connecticut. Connecticut will play Arizona Friday night in the semifinals of the U.S. Women's College Basketball Championship Tournament. UConn star guard Paige Beckers has become the first freshman to win the Associated Press Women's Basketball Player of the Year Award. Beckers helped lead the Lady Huskies to their 13th consecutive Final Four with 28 points Monday night when UConn beat Baylor. Overall this season, Paige Beckers is averaging more than 20 points a game. Paige Beckers, the Associated Press Women's Basketball Player of the Year. No fooling. That wraps up the April 1st edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the sunny side of sports.
I get it.